feel the fear and do it anyway.
Good things come to those who work hard and never give up.
Be better than you were yesterday.
Don't compare your chapter one to someone else's chapter 20.
Be the best version of yourself because somebody else has already taken.
Don't be afraid to go that extra mile because when you do, you realise there aren't that many people out there.
Hello and welcome to season 4 of She Has a Goal in Mind, brought to you each week by Darcy Morris and Gabriella Jukes.
On this episode, we have none other than Barnsley FC women manager, Jess Horsley. We delve into her journey leading the team into the professional ranks, her insights into the evolving landscape of women's football, and how she juggles being a teacher with being a manager.
Hi, Jess.
Hi, Jess.
Hi, all right.
Thank you so much for agreeing to come on the podcast. We're really looking forward to learning more about you and your role at Barnsley. And I guess, yeah, find out a bit more about your career. So I think we're going to start off, if you're happy to start now.
Yeah, that's fine.
We're going to do it a little bit different this time because it's a new season for us. And we're going to start with some quick fire this or that questions just to get things going.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first one is tea or coffee?
Tea.
Morning person or night owl?
Night owl.
A sweet or savoury snacks?
Sweet.
Dogs or cats?
Dogs. Either but I'll go with dogs.
Books or movies?
Movies.
Summer or winter?
Summer.
Pasta or pizza?
Pizza.
Phone call or text message?
Phone call.
Netflix binge or night out?
Night out.
Cup final victory or league title triumph?
League title.
And what would you say is your go-to pre-match playlist song?
I'm not very good with music either. I don't know. I like the new Beyoncé song, but I don't know what it's called. Terrible. I don't know.
Oh, that's one.
The new country on that one,
Love it. Yeah, good option. Good option. Brilliant. Oh, no, love that. Perfect. So I guess we're going to your career then. First of all then, how did you get into football? Is it something you've always had love for? Have you always had love for the game?
Yeah, so from primary school, it was something that I started playing, and then I started playing for Barnsley when I was a kid. And then I continued to play. And then I actually went into the army. So I stopped playing civvy football and carried on playing while in the army. So then when I was in the army, I did my coaching badges. When I was in there for my level 2, I needed a team to do my badge with. So I joined back to the club that I was with before and did my coaching badge, which is obviously the senior team I'm with now. And so that's how I ended up doing it. Then they got a senior team. I ended up getting asked if I could just play just for the first season, just while, you know, they started doing it. Can we just have you just for some players? And now I've just carried on doing it and dropped on my feet, I guess, at the start. And now I'm still where I am, which is obviously absolutely fantastic.
Your journey from coaching and becoming a manager in a male-dominated environment, how has that been and what was the process like for you doing that?
When we were younger, I think, it were always male coaches, but then when I went in the army, I had male coaches throughout all the time in the army. And then I came out and the younger team that I coached for, I did that with two of my friends and they're both female coaches. And I do it now with another female coach. And I find it all right, whether I've just been lucky and I've dropped on my feet, I don't seem to have come under any criticism as far as it being, I know, a male sport. I haven't found it difficult. I've always found that the males that have been involved with the teams that I'm with have always been really supportive. Again, whether that's I've just dropped on my feet with the males that I've worked with, but I've always found that they've been really helpful. I think the males that I've worked with have got so much experience, which helps massively within the role that I'm doing, especially now with it just going professional this year at the club. The more experience you've got with someone, the easier it makes it for me, myself, and for the team. yes, most of the people involved, other than the new person that's come in, Anne, who works with us, who's come over. Everyone else tends to be male dominated, but they've got so much experience that, and they're just so supportive, so it doesn't really make a difference. But again, might just be luck.
No, that's good to hear. You've had, I guess, such a positive experience. Again, it's, you know, it is not always negative, is it? In this industry, there's a lot of male allies that give a lot of great support to us as well. But did you have any role models then, I guess, growing up in the world of in football or just in general?
I think you look at the role models in the managers now that are coaching in the female game. You look at Emma Raines, who's obviously at Chelsea. What she does and what she has done since she's been there has obviously been phenomenal, and she's managed to get a team from where they were to what she's got now, which is fantastic. And I don't think you'd ever have thought 15 years ago that a female would be able to be as big as they are in women's football. Everyone knows who they are. I think most people, you know, if you walk out and you just say, do you know this person? Do you know this person? Everybody knows who she is, especially who's involved in football. So I think, you know, it's, for me, they're the people that you look up to in, when it comes to football and how they do things. So that's really good, especially to have a female in female sport. I think that's massive. Obviously, there's still the males that do that, but to have the females involved in that, I think is massive. And to get females still on their coaching badges, like I'm on my coaching badge at the minute, my UEFA B, and there's only three females on it. But when I did my level two, I was the only girl on it. So there's more and more females coming on coaching courses because it's coming more common. And females obviously feel more comfortable doing it. And I feel like more supported. There's not one person on that course I'm on, and there's about 35 of us, that make any of us feel uncomfortable, which I think if you ask people on courses 15 years ago, they'll have said complete opposite to that, because males think that they shouldn't be on the course, whereas now they want you to be there and they think it's brilliant and they're also interested. And about 50% of the males on that course coached female teams.
That's incredible.
So, yeah, I know, it's really positive. I didn't think it had been the case, but a lot of them are, like I said, 50% were doing female, either open age or junior teams, so they've all got a massive interest in it.
No, that's brilliant. That's, I guess you're also, like, you know, forging that path for other women as well, and seeing you, you know, thriving, and I think that's incredible. And like you mentioned, Emma Hayes is an ultimate, like, boss woman, isn't she? I love her, Emma Hayes. She's brilliant. And I guess as they say, and the saying goes, if you can see it, you can be it. So having someone like Emma, and Serena Wiegmann as well out there, so it's definitely, I guess, forging a path for others, so well done.
Yeah, definitely.
Can you share a bit more about the journey, you know, that you've had with Barnsley FC Women as well, and obviously they recently became professional, so can you tell us a bit more about that as well?
Yeah, so obviously last season we were playing in tier six, and the club, they did approach a little bit before the end of the season, and they said they're thinking of coming and taking over and making it more professional and getting you involved within the men's team. I think it's one of them where, do you believe it until it happens? But then it got to like May last year, and they agreed to do it. So they kind of made us professional with them, and they took over. So everything kind of went from a level of here, and it literally just skyrocketed. It just went from not really having much, like, you maybe train twice a week, but it would depend on who decided to turn up. Kit was here, there and everywhere, and what you got was like that. Whereas now we, you know, we get absolutely everything. We have at the S&C, we have all the pods for the girls to follow. They get all the stats that they can log on and they can see. We have somebody who does match analysis, so we get pre-match and post-match every single week for all the teams that we play. You know, you've got somebody who comes along and does all the kit. They come before training, they turn up, they put it on, they take it off, it gets washed, it's laid out ready for them. You know, the same with the kit on a match day. They don't even have to think, they just turn up and it's there to come to the match. And they're in, you know, the men's changing room is probably one of the best changing rooms within League One, if not the best changing room in League One. Got the best facilities. The women get to use that. We train three times a week, which is probably better than most teams in Tier 4 and Tier 3. You know, the two leagues above us do. They get use of the actual first team men's gym. So it's just the facilities that we get and the opportunities that the club give us is absolutely fantastic, and way beyond what anybody would have thought we'd have got this season, and way beyond what any club probably around us and in leagues above but we'll get. So it's just something we need to, you know, keep taking to us advantage, because, you know, it's something that not everybody's going to get. So it's absolutely fantastic.
No, that's brilliant to hear, you know, especially, you know, as you got, you know, promoted last season, to give that players the chance to play, you know, at somewhere like Orkwell, and like you mentioned, all access to all these different things like the sports science and the physio, and from your experience being part of Barnsley for what I imagine is most of your life, I guess, yeah, how did that make you feel to be involved within that, you know, mega change within the women's game?
Yeah, obviously for me, like I said before, I think whether it was dropping on my feet, being in the right place at the right time, I think that's, in football, that's probably one of the biggest sayings people say. You have to be sometimes in the right place at the right time to get what you need at the start, to start the ball kind of rolling. And that's, I think, what I needed to do. And luckily I decided to do it when we're in the first season and take over. And then the second season when we were in tier six, I said, yeah, I'll carry on doing it. And luckily stayed for the second season and we got promoted. And now it's just the best opportunity I could have ever dreamed of. And working with Julianne, who's one of the directors of the club, she's absolutely phenomenal. She's so supportive and she gives us absolutely everything we can have. She's in contact with me all the time and just makes my life so much easier. New director of sport now, Em Ladden. And like I say, Anna's just come in. They just make it just so easy. Like, it's not easy at times, it's hard, it can be time consuming, but when you've got their support, it's just brilliant. And to have the opportunities you get, like playing on Oakwell in September, with the first like women's team to ever play on Oakwell, was, even though I didn't play obviously on the pitch, and you know, for those that did, and for me watching, well, that was probably one of the proudest moments I think in football for me, because it was unbelievable. It was brilliant, tiring, exhausting, didn't get the result we wanted. But, you know, it were fantastic. And to see the girls progress from there to now, because of the facilities we've got and the amount of development that's gone in from the S&C coach and all the equipment that we've got that's allowed them to develop, is phenomenal. We're like a completely different team. So we can only obviously go upwards next season, which, you know, is the plan.
I think, obviously, you know, people like you in positions that you're in make such a massive difference in the women's game. And personally then, how do you see the women's game evolving at club level and in the broader context of sport as well?
I think if clubs carry on getting behind football teams, then they can only keep progressing up and up and up. Obviously, Barnsley are currently a League Two football team. League One football team, sorry. And, you know, there's teams that are around in the League One. There's teams that you've got in the Championship and in the Premiership that can support, obviously, and give back into their female team. And I think that's going forward that the football teams just need to keep on doing, because the more they back the women's team, the more the women's team is going to develop. Obviously, it can probably be hard for football teams to do that, because financially, I know it's the men that ultimately are going to be the ones that, you know, it's a business at the end of the day. And I know it's the men that are the ones that financially are probably the ones that bring it in, especially when the women's teams are in the lower leagues. But the only way to make it bigger and develop it to be bigger is to give some time and input into the female game, because that's the thing that's getting bigger at the minute. Like, we've got the junior setup, which is they're still classed as Barnsley ladies, and they've got teams from under eights all the way up to under 18s, and then they have got a development team, and they're just packed out. They've not got any space for any more players. They've got two teams in some age groups, because girls just want to play football all the time, and they're obsessed with it. Like, girls think it's the best thing in the world. Since the England won the Euros and since the World Cup, like, girls love it, and even boys now know, like, who some female footballers are, and you've got boys who are wanting girls to play on their team, and it's just becoming bigger and bigger. And I think men's teams just need to buy into it, and that's the way to make it bigger and bigger. And, you know, you're always going to have the men some male fans that are not going to agree with it, but I guess that's just life. You're never going to change them fans, because you get the old-fashioned fans that agree, men's football, and it's men's football, and that's it. And, you know, you're never going to please everybody, but that's just life. But the ones that you can convert, then they're the ones, if you keep promoting it, they're the ones that you will eventually convert, and they're the ones that eventually might just say, you know what, just let them have their female football, and it'll just keep on getting bigger.
Yeah, that's something I guess we're seeing quite a lot, especially over social media, I guess the past few months, in regards to a lot of sexism with women in football, not just players or managers, but in broadcasting as well. Is that something you've ever kind of experienced yourself?
You see it sometimes on like the Facebook page when people put stuff on and, you know, they comment, but you can't kind of just look at it and just have a little laugh because, like I've said, you're never gonna change it. Some people are never gonna change. Some people are always gonna have opinion on what they think. And again, that had never really bothered me. They're entitled to opinion, and like I say, you're never gonna change it. And obviously, if, for example, the male team are doing well, and the female team are, and the female team's getting publicity, the fans are never gonna comment because the men's team are on a high as well, so they're happy. But your problem is obviously when your men's team are potentially not performing to how they want you to, and the female team's getting some publicity, they're always going to have a comment because they want their men's team to have all the concentration and all the publicity, not the women's team. And you get the comments of why you're concentrating on them when wear this and wear that. But, you know, like I said, I guess that's just life, and you just have to deal with that. You're never going to change everybody. But for the generations of people that are coming through, for the young kids that are now in school, they're the one who, when they get older, hopefully they're the ones that will be able to have the positive attitude about females football, and eventually it'll just fizzle out and it'll not be a negative attitude.
Yeah, hopefully it will just become, you know, the norm. And I think that is getting better. I did a workshop last week around International Women's Day with Swansea City Football Club and their foundation with Her Game 2 as well. And the young girls were only in year 5 and 6, so quite young, about 10 years old. And I was talking to them about sexism and discrimination in life in general, not just in football. And I was so shocked, though, to hear that so many of them were aware of what sexism was. And they'd said that they'd experienced it in school with the boys that they didn't class with and they play with. And I was so shocked to hear that. Mm. You know, they're such a young age. And it's so wrong that, you know, that 10 years old experience in this and they're aware of it. But I guess the important thing is raising awareness and teaching them that, you know, it shouldn't be tolerated. Yeah. And some of the reactions I got from them, I was asking them, if someone came and told you you can't play football because you're a girl, what would you say? And some of the reactions I got from them were brilliant, to be fair to them. But hopefully that will, you know, it'll become the norm, just seeing a girl kick a ball. I don't see, you know, what is the big fuss about it? But fingers crossed, you know, this it's just going to grow and grow. And especially as you were talking about with the, you know, the Lionesses doing so well, do you think that has had a massive impact, I guess, not only on, you know, the WSL and those sort of leagues, but also from the grassroots up as well?
Massive, because, I mean, you look at, like, a couple of weeks ago when Arsenal played Man United at the Emirates. I think before England won the Euros and before England got to the final in the World Cup, I don't think you'd have ever had a sellout in a normal football match like you did there, but they had a sellout at the Emirates when they played that fixture. Now, I think if the national team had not done as well as they did, would that have happened? Back when I were playing football, let's say, maybe 15 years ago, I might have been a little bit less. I hope it were a little bit less. But you'd have been lucky to get like 500, 300 people to come and watch a football match. You're now getting like 70,000 people into a stadium, you know, to watch two female teams. It's absolutely mental. Like, you just can't. It's ridiculous. Like, you'd say it's ridiculous because no male who you get, you know, you get people who are commenting on things for female football and they'd be like, that's ridiculous. And really, you think about it and you're like, that is absolutely ridiculous. How have you got 70,000 people to watch a female game? Because you could never believe it. How football, female football was like 15 years ago, how it's come to that is like, I can't believe that they had a sellout. Like, it's absolutely mental that's how many people are in that stadium, but it's now become a norm. Now, don't get me wrong, Arsenal are obviously a massive football team, and what they do and how they are with their players and what they offer their players and their whole setup is absolutely unbelievable. So, you know, and, you know, to play at the Emirates and Arsenal, such an unbelievable football men's team as well, and this obviously doing so well. So to fill that stadium is unbelievable, but, you know, you've got your likes of your Man City as well, and your Man United's and your Chelsea's, but, you know, to get a sellout at Emirates is just out of this world, I think. And that's just the way that female football is going. And I think that's why it will become a norm eventually, because, you know, it's just getting it. It's on TV now as well, maybe not as much as males, and it isn't, but every week now there is a female fixture on the TV. Like, it's on there, and you go on the Sky Sports app and there's championship and there's tier three fixtures on there. You might not have all the stats like you do with men's, but you can see the fixtures for now for the top three female leagues. So I think it's only going to be a matter of time until you then get tier four on, because... You know,
that all makes a difference, doesn't it, as well? Like, you know, that adds to that exposure of the women's game. And it's, again, growing and growing, isn't it? It's fantastic to see.
And people want to know the stats, and people obviously want to watch women play now. And that, like, you know, you say it's ridiculous. It should be the norm.
Oh,
and
I think the more it's mental. You can't believe it. They have that many fans. It's brilliant.
Yeah, the more exposure it gets, the more money that will be put into it, and then the bigger it will get. So... Yeah. Fingers crossed, it's on the app. Anyway, bringing it back to you then, as a manager, what do you look for? What qualities do you look for in players to build a team? What would you say you look for specifically?
So we obviously play a certain way. We follow what the club does. So we get, I would say told, but we know what we have to do at the start of the season, and we get given, this is how we're going to play it. This is what we're going to do. So that's what we kind of go off. So we know what players we need to, kind of players we need to put in certain positions. So that's what we go off. I think for myself and my assistant coach, Lynn, we, as long as people give everything in a game and put in all their effort, regardless to what we come off the pitch with and what the result is at the end of the game, as long as everybody's done the best that they can do, then we're happy. If we come off the pitch at the end of the game and people haven't done what they're capable of doing, then that's when there's obviously issues. And we want people to obviously physically be fit. It's a hard one in our league. You're not in a position to be really picky in what you want, and because you have to let players adapt into certain positions, and you have to move players a lot and adapt them to where you need them to play. Obviously, being in tier five, you're not able to pay players. So you have to attract players through what the club's offering, which is obviously unbelievable this season. So that's one thing that's drawn players in. And they obviously get the free gym membership, which is also another good thing to get them in. But it's hard when we've got another Barnsley team that's only in the league above us. And they're obviously, they pay players. So it's a really hard thing. So we kind of do a trials. We see what players come, and then we just kind of take it from there. And if we have to get a player that potentially is a forward, it might be that we have to say, right, well, we will sign you, but we need to put you on this, in this position, because you've got this, this and this. So it's a hard one, that. It'd be nice to be able to kind of get what we want and then go and say, we'll have this player because they've got this, this and this. But sometimes you have to adapt it, especially in this league, to the situation that we're in. Obviously, the aim is to get out of this league, to get into the national leagues, which is tier four and above. And then things become a little bit different then, because you can kind of get players to come to your club for other reasons, as well as, you know, trying to get them there is the hard thing, especially in the league we're in now. But it's working. We are getting players that are interested. And that's just what we need to carry on doing. That's kind of how we do it, in a nutshell.
But would you say that one of the challenges, I guess, in the game, I guess it happens in the men's game as well, you know, like, the further down you go through the tiers, but the fact that, you know, you don't pay the players at this kind of stage, would you say that's a mega challenge in the women's game?
Yeah, I think it's a massive one, because you have players that'll go and I'd rather go and I know it's bad, but I'd rather go sit on a bench and get £20 than come and play for a football team. But then it gets to this, like, February, January, when players are like, well, I don't want to be there anymore, and they kind of see what the club's doing, and then they potentially want to come to you, regardless if they're getting paid or not. And, you know, we've done quite well within the team. I think there's quite a lot of respect for staff amongst players, and we do well, and players seem to enjoy it. We get fantastic attendance at training, you know, between 14 and 18 to 20 players at every training session, which, again, is unknown for in a lot of leagues in football. That's what we go with. Again, if we went up into the leagues, you are able to then pay players. But again, it's a hard one in football, isn't it? Because you don't want to just pay a player to come and play with you. to play for your team just because they're getting a little bit of money, because then are they playing because they want to play out the pain because they're getting 40 quid at the end of a football match.
Yeah. And I suppose like the journey that you've been on though as a club as well is a massive thing to be a part of. So I'm sure the players would be so proud of knowing how far they've come as well.
Yeah, and like there's no team in this around our league or that play on the stadium like they do. They've played in it twice. Whether we get the chance to play on it again this season, I'm not sure. Get the facilities they get to train and get the facilities they get when they're at training, get the equipment they get. You know, they don't drive to any away game. They get everything that they get, and we try and give them everything possible. And it's only going to get better next season. The support, like I said, from Julianne and Em Ladden's absolutely fantastic. And they're trying to give us everything to make it work next season and make things out even better. So hopefully, you know, that's a way to attract players. You know, we have our own media people. We have people that do social media that are every single football game. You know, we've got about now 11 members of staff for a starting 11 football team, which I don't think is bad for a TFI football team. And the girls know that. They know that they've got it good. We just need to keep reiterating that to them, and the word gets spread eventually. They've spread it to everybody, and you know, a little bit of social media attention, which they get all the time, and everybody sees it. You know, I work in a school, and my kids run up to me all the time and like, oh, I've seen you on this, I've seen you on that, I've seen your football team here, I've seen your football team. Like, it gets spread out, so they think it's brilliant. You know, they print all the pictures off and they're like bringing them, like, what? And you're like, I don't think you should be doing that, but if they're seeing me on social media, everybody else at the team, then other people will be seeing them, and other people at other clubs will be seeing them. So it doesn't get much until somebody's like, oh, you know, they're doing really well, I want to go and have a look at them. And so
yeah, that's exposure as well, see, isn't it? Because we live in a digital age now, and you know, it's like Gab said, if you can see it, you can be it. And these young kids online, and if they can see that, you know, Barnsley women are very active on social media, it might entice them then to want to play for you as well. What is your fan base like? Do they travel with you?
No, well, if we play maybe at Wakefield, we tend to get some, or if we're local, but a lot of our games are up north, so it's at least 2 hours away. So we don't tend to get any other than family that come. We do okay when we play at home. We get around 200 fans, which for our level is good. It makes a difference when we play some teams. You know, we played South Shields the other week and we scored in the last 30 seconds. You know, and their manager said that the crowd literally made a difference because they just didn't stop screaming and shouting, and you could hear it. And if you'd have seen the video at the end, you couldn't see the fans in the crowd, but it sounded like it was just full. It sounded like there were about 600 people there because they were making that much noise, and it does make a difference. You know, the kids absolutely love it. I have, like I said, my school, you get people that are like, I'm coming to watch you, and they do. They all come and watch. So, you know, people's friends and family are now, and people where they work, they're all coming to watch you, and it does make a massive difference.
Oh, great. That's great to hear that. You know, I guess it'll only build and build as well as the, you know, as time goes on, which is fantastic. But you did mention just there that you work in a school, but can you tell us, I guess, what a day in the life of Jess is like as a manager, I guess, and what you do day to day? How does it work out for you?
So I'm a science teacher, Monday to Friday. Other than when I get all my school holidays, which are quite nice. I work in a secondary school, teach biology is my main subject, but then I have to obviously teach chemistry and physics to key stage 3 and some key stage 4. And then I do obviously the football 4 times a week most of the time, and then obviously through the week when I need to do it as well. And then I'm in the Army Reserve still as well. So I do when I can. So I'm quite busy. I've not got much spare time, but you're only young for a little bit, aren't you? So when I get older, I've got time to rest, I think.
Oh, fair play to you. That's amazing. How do you fit it all in, isn't it?
How do you manage to balance everything? That's incredible.
I go from one place, finish work, then I drive, maybe go to the Army, then I drive back, and then I do football, and then I just juggle. But it's working so far. I'm not sure how long I'll be able to juggle it all for, but it's working for now, so keep it going.
Would you say the aim would be maybe to be full-time as a manager in the future? Is that something you would maybe be interested in doing?
Yeah, obviously I'll get once I finish the UEFA B, which should be done the back end of this year, and then potentially see what comes off the back of that and see what progress. Obviously, getting promoted out of this league will make a massive difference. And if that's something that obviously comes up in the future and something to look at, then that's obviously something that I'd have to maybe consider. Football, something I've done all my life and something that I really enjoy. So if you can be involved in football, I think it's something you want to do, because the day goes really quick when you're doing something that you really enjoy. So, you know, that you never say never. So we'll see what happens. You know, it's at the minute, obviously, it's part-time until we see what happens. Obviously, as you get higher in the league, especially maybe Tier 3 Championship, and that's when it becomes full-time. Obviously, we're quite a long way away from that. But, you know, if that did happen in however many years and I'm potentially still involved, or if I had some involvement in it in whatever way, then that would be something, obviously, I'd potentially look at doing.
Where would you see yourself personally and professionally in the next year?
So obviously my UEFA B is the most important thing for me to finish. I think obviously because I jumped into football 3 years ago and I'd only had my level two because COVID hit and it kind of slowed everything down what I wanted to do, and that with that UEFA B is also slowed down and you couldn't apply for them, so it's been really delayed. So hopefully I can get that done, and I think just massively increase my experience within football, because, you know, it's going from a level two to finishing UEFA B. The experience I've got since being at Barnsley this year, since it's gone professional, has been massive. So I'm hoping that in 12 months' time, if we're not promoted this year, is to be in a position where next year we are. That's where I'm hoping we'll be in 12 months' time.
I'm sure you'll get there. I'd be looking forward actually to following, you know, your progress, and I'll definitely be looking out for Barnsley as well. Yeah, fingers crossed for you. But obviously we spoke a bit about you know, turning professional just a year ago, just under a year ago. And obviously that, you know, being promoted.
Yeah.
Obviously that was a very memorable and I guess a key moment, I guess, in your career. But are there any other achievements? Either as your time as Barnsley women manager, or just in your personal career, that kind of stand out to you?
So when one of the massive ones for me, when I was in the army, we played against the German armed forces for a remembrance game, Battle of the Somme, actually, I think. It was in November. We played at Knox County in front of, I think we were just shy of 9,000 people. That was back in 2018. Yep, 2018, I think it were. That were one of the best times I've had playing football. It was fantastic. I always said, if I don't play football again, then I'm happy that this has been one of the games I've played. I think that was just as football was starting to get fans coming, and they did a thing with schools and they got them all to go. So that was one of the proudest moments of my life, footballing, should I say, to do that. It were absolutely brilliant. I'm not sure how football players play in front of 70,000 people, because I couldn't hear myself think. So to have 70,000 people in front of you screaming, I honestly don't know how they can hear themselves think. So that was fantastic. And then with Barnsley, the first season we won the cup during COVID, that were obviously really good. And then winning the league last year was fantastic. I think that out of the league and the cup, like I said before, winning the league for me would be a bigger achievement than winning a cup. It's, you know, the cup, not if it can be luck, but, you know, it's just a one-off game every game, and, you know, anything can happen in the cup, whereas in the league it's a consistency throughout the season, and, you know, I think games can come back to haunt you if you go through a spell of a couple of games where you don't play well. And I think that for me is the best achievement. And last season we went all season without, we won every game away from home. And I think we lost one game at home and we drew one game at home. So we literally dropped 5 points all season, which was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, what a season you had.
Yeah, it was brilliant last season. So that was one of my best achievements in football.
Oh, brilliant. You know, you were talking about your experience in the army there. Do you get to travel a lot then, playing football with the army?
Yeah, so I went to 9 different countries in the army. In the just over 5 years I was into play football. So that was brilliant. If I were a school teacher, I'd be able to carry on going, but I can't get time off work. But yeah, so I went to the UAE. We toured the UAE for three weeks. So I went to Bahrain, Abu Dhabi, Qatar.
Wow.
Ugh, two more. But went, yeah, five different places there, and went into schools and coached the kids in the schools, and then played four fixtures in Dubai and Bahrain and a few places. So that was fantastic. And to go and do coaching in schools in deprived areas over there was fantastic. And to see the kids' faces, and that were both females and males over there. So that was brilliant. Went to Canada and over to Toronto to play football. That was good.
You've been well-travelled then.
Yeah, it's been fantastic.
It's amazing that you could do that through the use of, you know, sport as well, and through football. Yeah. What would you say is your favourite place that you've been to travel to?
To play football. I enjoyed Canada. That was one of my good ones. But the tour of when we did the UAE was fantastic. I think it was the fact that just going into schools and coaching the kids in the schools and giving out loads of kit and stuff, just to see the kids' faces. I think for me, that's the thing that I like about coaching, and that's what I like about teaching. As much as it's hard and there's a lot of moaning, and I know teachers do a lot of moaning all the time, but when you see a kid smile and you see the kid's face when, you know, whether you give them a prize or you just give them a good compliment, that's what makes it worth it. And when we're out there in the UAE and we're handing out all the football shirts to the kids, and you saw the smile on their face, because some of them, you know, they'll never be able to afford that, they'll never be able to, you know, have that. I think that made it better than going out there and playing a football match, to be able to do that and to be able to do some coaching for the kids out there, but they might not get, because, you know, they only get the P that they get in school. And to be able to do that, that was one of the highlights of my trips when it was in the army.
Would you say you took any lessons from that experience teaching the deprived kids?
Yeah, I think you just don't take anything for granted. Life's massively too short to take anything for granted. And I just think when we're playing, this is why I think players, I just say, just give absolute everything you can get, because for you to have the opportunity that you've got now is bigger and better than the opportunity that any team or any club's got around this area. And you should take it massively with open arms, because, you know, you're so lucky to have it. You're the first, you know, like, set of girls to be able to have it. And I guess that's what I take. You know, life's massively too short for anybody to take anything for granted. And when you're able to go and work with these kids that have got that, you know, that they'll never be able to, I imagine. You know, you might get the odd one that's lucky enough to come over and make it, potentially the male footballers if they're good enough, but female wise them girls that are out there, especially how women's football is now, they'll never be able to, I imagine, come over here and make it as a female footballer, because of where they're from and the areas that they live in. So yeah, should especially never take anything for granted. And that's what I say to the younger kids at school that can play football: just play football as much as you can, enjoy it as much as you can, because you never know what opportunities can arise from it.
Fantastic. That's good, great advice. And my next question was actually going to be, you know, what advice would you give to young aspiring female footballers who either dream, you know, of playing professionally or get involved in that coaching and managing side in the future? You know, you've had plenty of experience in both sides. What advice would you give to them?
Never let anyone tell you that, you know, you can't do something. You know, if I know it, sometimes it's hard when you're in school, like you've said before, you've been into a school and you've about sexism, you've heard kids hear it. You do get it in schools where you've got boys say, well, you're not playing on my team and you're not this, is to just kind of ignore it. The best way to show someone that you can do something is through actions rather than words. So for me, that's the best way to go about it, and just carry on doing something. You know, especially young people, things all change when you go through a growth spurt, when you go through this. So just keep going and do what you enjoy, even if you don't make it as a professional. If you enjoy playing football, then carry on playing football up until whatever age you can. There's like 10, 12 leagues in female football, all the way down in Chef Hallam leagues. Then you can go and play five-a-side, you can go and do this. And if it's something you enjoy, then continue to play it, because not only will it's enjoyment, it's physical activity, and, you know, it helps your mental health and it helps you make friends, and it's something for you to do than just sit in the house and, you know, not do something just because someone's told you you can't. And I know it takes sometimes people are not always as strong as others to continue doing that. But that's one thing I always say to people is just carry on doing stuff and do what you can, especially for coaches. You know, some people might not be able to make it as a footballer. They might not be good enough to be a professional footballer. But then if you're not and you enjoy it, then go down the coaching badge route, especially if you're a female, because they're crying out for females to do their coaching badges more than they're crying out for males, because there's loads of male coaches, but there's not loads of female coaches.
Yeah, brilliant.
And that's extremely good advice.
Yeah, there's so many opportunities out there now as well, isn't there? There's so many different avenues, routes you can go down in all aspects of football, which is great.
And there's extra ones for females. So when you apply for coaching badges, you can go for like, is it like a grant, or you can get bursaries for it. And females is one of them that you can get. And once you've got your badges, you can go on free like courses and days to go and do stuff, which I was getting told about from my UEFA B, which is options that females get that males don't. So that's something that they should just massively take advantage of, because, you know, males can be as sexist as they want, but they're not going to get the opportunities that some females get. So that's something that they can do that, you know, males are not able to do.
Yeah. And that's great to hear.
And hopefully our listeners may be inspired and take that route, and we'll have more women in the football industry.
Hopefully.
The final question then for this evening, and one thing that we ask every single guest that comes onto the podcast, is what is your favourite quote and why?
So I knew you were going to ask this, so I found one earlier. And it's, nobody ever regretted it. Nobody ever gave his best regretted it. And that's something that I don't use that quote, but I always say to my players, and it's what I always say to them, is if you go out there and do perform to the best of your ability, then regardless of the result, there's nothing that we can say as myself or as coaching staff that you've not given everything and you didn't, you know, you've done this wrong. As long as you give your all, sometimes you don't get the result you want, but as long as you've done the right thing, if the ball's not gone in the net, but you've done the right thing, that's all we can ask. Sometimes football matches don't go the way that you want them to go, and sometimes things happen in a football match and people make mistakes, but if you've done the right thing, sometimes it's just not executed properly. That's all we can ask. But if you don't do the right thing through making the wrong decision several times or not putting in the effort, then that's when things go wrong. So that would be the one for me.
Yeah, perfect. I love that quote. And I think it's true just, you know, other than football as well, in life in general, isn't it? If you give it your all, then you've got to be proud of yourself.
As long as you do your best, then that's all that anybody can ever ask.
Yeah, perfect. Well, I think that's a perfect way to round up our chat with you. But thank you so much for, you know, coming on the podcast and sharing your story with us. I'm looking forward to, you know, following your journey and watching you guys progress. It's been great to chat to you about your career. So thank you so much.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Season 4. And if you did, please don't forget to subscribe on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And also keep up to date with our guests on our social media at A Goal in Mind Podcast.